There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, I'm Gemma, and welcome to another episode of Good Influence. This is the podcast where each week you and I meet a guest who helps us pay attention to something we should know about, as well as answering some of your questions. This week, we're talking about ADHD in women, how the condition can present differently than people often expect, the privilege of obtaining a diagnosis, and the light bulb moment that finding your community can bring. I will also note here that we're having this discussion as two women who were both diagnosed with ADHD in adulthood. Neither of us are doctors or psychiatrists. This is a chat about personal experiences and things we've learned and does not substitute professional advice. So joining me this week is Ellie Middleton. Ellie is a writer, activist, and content creator. After being diagnosed with ADHD as well as autism at the age of 24, she went on to found the online community Unmasked, which she describes as a safe space offering resources, friends, and support to people with autism, ADHD, and other neurodivergent conditions. The inspiration behind LinkedIn's I Am Professional campaign, Ellie is working hard to break down stereotypes about neurodivergent women.
All throughout kind of like childhood, teenage years, even now, it's like I'll find one hobby and I'll be like, this is my life. Like, I will live and die by this hobby. Like, if it's baking, I'll go out, I'll buy all the baking equipment. I'll start an Instagram page thinking, right, this is it. I'm going to start a baking business.
This is my new
and
life.
Then 2 weeks later, I'm like, no, I actually don't even enjoy baking. I was just looking for something to keep me busy.
So let's kick off. Could you, if you wouldn't mind, tell us a bit about your experience of being diagnosed with ADHD?
Yeah, so it's all happened very kind of quickly for me. So it's all in the last like 9-10 months. So basically, I have always struggled with my mental health, always been misdiagnosed with like anxiety and depression, and kind of always gone through cycles of being like this busy, energetic, ambitious, like bubbly person, and then just crashing and burning every like 6 months or so. Mm-hmm. And I think the main time was kind of like sixth form. I ended up actually dropping out of school because I just crashed and burned. And then I think that cycle kind of kept happening. And about the start of last year, when it was the third lockdown after Christmas, where we were all kind of like cooped up, I think I could kind of like feel that crashing and burning happening again. And I was kind of like, there's something going on here. Like, it's not anxiety, it's not depression. Like, I'm not an anxious person. Like, I don't worry about things. Like, I just think a lot. And I was like, almost like, yeah, aware that something else was going on and digging around online about, you know, Googling my symptoms or whatever, and trying to just like find an answer to whatever else was going on. And at the same time, I was having counseling, and me and my counselor were kind of just talking about something, and she said to me, has it ever been looked into why you take things so literally? And I was like, no, it hasn't, but like, I think I know what you're hinting at here. So I kind of went away, and that kind of put me on the autism path first. And then seeing that, and then kind of discovering this whole world of like neurodiversity, I guess. Kind of saw a lot about ADHD and autism, and I was like, ah, I think I know what's going on here. So I kind of had that light bulb moment and spoke to someone from the NHS who was like, yeah, I think you definitely need a diagnosis or an assessment at least for ADHD and autism. So I kind of went ahead with the ADHD one first because it felt like a more tangible outcome. I think I was like aware that if I did have ADHD and could get a diagnosis, there was like the option of going on medication, which could kind of like help get me out of this pit that I was in. So I was almost like, yeah, that one seems more urgent right now. So I actually went private for that one because I was just at a point where I was like, I need some answers and I need them now. Yeah. So yeah, I managed to get a private assessment and got my ADHD diagnosis in October last year, and then kind of had that realization and then got my autism diagnosis in like February or March. So yeah, it was a bit of a whirlwind, but I think it was just that reading of all the list of symptoms and being like, this all makes sense now. Like, yeah.
Yeah, things kind of falling into place and making a lot of sense. That's definitely something I can relate to as well. So, I mean, as it's been so recent, talk to me a little bit about Unmasked, because I feel like a lot of the work that you do now, that must have happened really quite quickly in terms of when you'd had that diagnosis and when it became a much bigger and kind of more public part of your life and kind of and what you do. How did you found that community and why, I guess?
I think part of it was literally just that I had this answer and this almost like felt like I had like this secret that everyone needed to know about. Mm. You know, I think I'd always been quite open about like struggling with what I thought was anxiety. And I'd always been quite open, like even through school. I think if we think back to like, so it was like 10 years ago, the mental health conversation wasn't like as far forward as it was now. And I was kind of like trying to like talk about my anxiety and stuff like that. And I'd had more like a very small scale, just like people that I knew through school and people that I like knew personally being like, oh my God, thank you. Like, I really relate to what you're saying. And then suddenly I was like, well, how many of those people were, I was wrong. I didn't have anxiety. So the thing that I was talking about that they were relating to, how many of them were actually relating to the fact that it wasn't anxiety? You know, if everything that I was saying was resonating with them, then, you know, they need to know about this too, because this might be their answer. And then they might have their light bulb moment. And I think it was this like, yeah, it was like, I felt like the world needed to know. Like it was such like a light bulb moment for me that everything, like we said, just clicked into place. That I was like, how many other people are there out there like waiting for this light bulb moment to happen? So I guess that was kind of like my reason for wanting to talk about it. But it happened really strangely, actually. So around that same time in October, I'd just started working in social media. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I was doing was working on like LinkedIn content for clients. So the company that I was working for at the time kind of were like, you know, I'd never posted on LinkedIn in my life. I had this idea that LinkedIn was for like professional men in suits. Like, I just, it was not me.
Yeah.
And they'd said to me, like, it'd be good if you could start posting on LinkedIn because it's what we do for clients. And it's almost like showing that we're good at the service we're offering. So I was like, yeah, okay, I can do that. And I did a post about basically like about that, about what it means to be professional and saying, you know, just because I'm young doesn't mean I'm not professional. Just because I talk about my ADHD doesn't mean I'm not professional. Just because I've got tattoos, piercings, doesn't mean I'm not professional. And that post just took off. So that kind of, I guess, kickstarted it, I think. That kind of got me to about 10,000 followers, like pretty much like overnight. So I think it was like the combination of suddenly having an audience bigger than anything I'd had before that was interested in what I had to say, and suddenly having this thing that I really wanted to tell people about. So I think the two just combined, and it's just like spiraled and snowballed since then. But yeah, I do think it was just this like, yeah, it did not make sense to me how it had taken me such a long time to get this answer. And it was like, almost I felt like I need other people to like know that this might be the answer to what's going on for them as well.
Yeah, that makes sense to me as well. I think, I mean, I'm a bit older than you are, but in a similar way, you know, I've had years of talking about depression and anxiety, and like that had basically been even like some kind of mood disorder was suggested at some point. And I feel like I've had the same sort of thing as you, where you've gone, oh, actually, that makes quite a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I'm interested to hear that you say, I mean, you talking about those things now, you say you were misdiagnosed with them and actually you don't think you were an anxious person. I am definitely still a very anxious person, but I've kind of had the same thing where you look back and wonder how much of it was sort of intermingled. And yeah, it definitely can be quite frustrating, I think. Like, I can remember specific conversations that I'd had with a therapist that I was seeing where I was talking about experiences I'd had kind of on antidepressants and how even though I felt less sad and they'd sort of eased the symptoms of that depression, I still just felt like there was something not right, and I just wasn't able to do things, and I just didn't understand why I couldn't just get things done. And now, having this bit of extra knowledge, I'm like, how on earth did we not realize this sooner? Yeah. Like, I could have known this years ago. It is quite frustrating. Have you found that frustration an element to it?
Yeah, definitely. I think like something that I think about a lot is that I was so lucky. Like I was referred to the Children and Adolescents Mental Health Service when I was about 15. So from the age of 15 to 19, I spent so much time with medical professionals. Like I had a key worker at CAMHS that I would see once a week. I saw a psychiatrist because I was on antidepressants under the age of 18. So it had to come through a psychiatrist rather than through my doctor. I saw psychologists. I did like therapy. And it's like, that is such a privileged position to have that amount of like access to all those medical professionals, because most people can't get that help. Like I was one of the lucky few that did get the help and still didn't, nobody even once like flagged it. And I'm like, what hope in hell have like 90% of people got? If I was so lucky to get that help, like that's great that I got all that. And still not one single person at one single point went, I wonder if this is what's going on here. And that like literally astounds me, that I'm like, you know, that I must have spent 100 hours underneath, like with people that were working in mental health teams. And I think because it is so like separate almost, like the neurodiversity and the neurodevelopmental teams and the mental health teams in the NHS, they don't, like nobody even considered that that might be what was kind of triggering me to feel that way. And yeah, I think that it really, really blows my mind that I'm like, come on, I was literally sat in front of you for like hours and hours and nobody even once went, you know, maybe this is what's going on. And yeah, I think for me, I think it is like, it's obviously possible to be like, have, you know, still have generalized anxiety alongside having ADHD and autism. But I think for me, the ways in which I experienced that sadness and that anxiety can almost be like explained by either the ADHD or the autism. So the like worry side of the anxiety, I don't think it was necessarily worries. It was just like lots and lots of thoughts. Like I would always just say to my mum, like, I wish my brain would shut up. And it's like, for me, I think that's more ADHD than anxiety, because it's just like having an overactive brain. And then like the depression side for me was all like these kind of 6 monthly crash and burns. And now I look back and I'm like, I think that's just like autistic meltdown, autistic shutdown. It's just me being overwhelmed and getting to that point where I crashed and burned. So I think, and I think since I've kind of found out and got my diagnosis and learned more about myself, I don't really experience those feelings in the same way, because yeah, like you say, it's like you know what's going on underneath there to cause it. So it's not just like, why do I feel so sad? Why is this medication not helping me? Like what, like just that kind of like loss of answers. Whereas now I'm like, okay, yeah, I feel sad, but I feel sad because I've been busy all week and I've burnt myself out, or it's, you know, I've been in a noisy environment, or I've not been in a stimulant. Like it's like I can almost logically work out why I'm feeling those feelings rather than just like the helplessness of I'm feeling this feeling just, you know, out of nowhere, I guess.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point that you make, actually, because you know, I've thought before, how did this not get picked up, etc. But that is a really good point, because when we're talking about ADHD or autism, they're not mental illnesses. It's like it's a whole different kind of thing. So I guess in the same way that like if you or I or someone has been speaking to mental health professionals, I guess maybe it's just not what they're looking for. Like if that's not what you've gone to them with, obviously, like luckily for both of us, like we've eventually like managed to figure this out, but I suppose it does make a bit more sense as to why, you know, like if you went to, I don't know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like you're almost going to like a physio, but you're actually, you've got a cut on your knee, like not, I think it's like you're almost going to like the wrong person. But yeah, I think it is very like a gray area, because like they're not mental illnesses, but they're still diagnosed by a psychiatrist. So I think it's like, yeah, I think it is almost that it's not what they're looking for. But I also think, like, especially with us both being women, they're not looking for the right things. Like all the kind of diagnostic criteria and all the research and all the like idea is always like, boys, it's the ADHD. Like, even I would have, if someone would have asked me this time a year ago, I would have, if someone said like, what's your opinion on ADHD? I would have been like, naughty little schoolboy, you know, someone that's young, someone that's rocking backwards and forwards on their chair. Like, it's almost like they're looking for this like outward hyperactivity of like causing chaos. They're not looking for how it so often is in girls, either not having the hyperactivity and just being inattentive. Or for me, I am definitely hyperactive, but it's just internal. Like, yeah, I might not be running around the room. I might not have been rocking on my chair and causing chaos in school, but I was having 20,000 thoughts inside my head, which I think is like a lot of the reason that they say that girls are more likely to be diagnosed with mental illnesses, because it's like, yeah, the hyperactivity isn't me fidgeting or running around. It's me having loads of thoughts, which when I explain that to somebody sounds a lot like anxiety, having loads of thoughts and thinking about things over and over again. And yeah, I think it's like, yeah, almost a combination of like the system, the way in which it works. It's like when you get to that point, they're looking at, okay, this is how this person's feeling. This is how we treat how this person's feeling, but not almost like, okay, well, what's causing them to feel that way? But also that like, yeah, they're not necessarily looking for the way that it shows up in people that aren't that kind of stereotypical white young boy.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's kind of it as well, where it all gets so messy and tangled up, because especially as we're talking about ADHD in kind of adult women, which we both are, this is our sort of lived experience, it is so common. I've then found out from researching that especially for adult women to have the sort of comorbid depression, anxiety, and it does make a lot of sense when you look at it that way sometimes, because by the time you've got to adulthood, knowingly or unknowingly, you've spent so many years kind of masking the things that you've maybe found difficulty with, or knowing that you find things really difficult that other people don't seem to find difficult, and sort of beating yourself up about it, and like feel like you're a rubbish person, feel like you're not doing things properly, feel like you can't cope, and kind of really internalizing that on yourself. I mean, that's very much my experience, and I'm saying that, you know, that won't be the same for everyone, but I've read a lot of people saying similar things. As an adult woman, what were some of the things that you can now kind of point to and say, oh, that was a symptom for me?
Yeah, I think definitely like the busy brain, like just that, like literally one of my mum has said, like since being like literally like 5 years old, I would just be like, oh, I just, you know, I just wish my brain would shut up, or not being able to sleep because I was just like thinking about loads of different things. I think that for me is just like the busyness of my brain and just like how much I'm thinking. I think like the hyperfixations have definitely been a big thing for me, like getting really obsessed with something, and then like, yeah, so it's almost like all throughout kind of like childhood, teenage years, even now, it's like I'll find one hobby and I'll be like, this is my life. Like, I will live and die by this hobby. Like, if it's baking, I'll go out, I'll buy all the baking equipment, I'll start an Instagram page thinking, right, this is it, I'm going to start a baking business.
This is my new
life.
And
then 2 weeks later, this is like 2 weeks later, I'm like, no, I actually don't even enjoy baking. I was just looking for something to keep me busy. Yeah. And I think that is something like I have gone through. Like, I was never that person that was like, oh, I know what I want to do with my life. Like, I, you know, my dream job is this. It was like a new thing every, you know, I played football when I was at primary school, then I did like performing arts, then I did cheerleading, then I, you know, was doing maths, and then I wanted to, you know, there's all so many, like, it was almost like a different obsession every year or whatever. Yeah, I think just like, yeah, the chaos. I think like, I am so chaotic. And it's like, I think like you say, a lot of that was masked because I didn't see anyone around me being that chaotic, and I was like, okay, you can't be like this. But yeah, I think for me it's always like, what's the next thing that I can do, what's a different thing that I can do, you know, what's something that's going to keep me like my, I feel like something has to be a lot to actually use up my whole brain, so I'm always looking for like something else. Like, I'd always be booking trips, I'd always be like looking for a gig to go to, or you know, looking for a course to sign up to or a job to apply to, just like, yeah, just almost like not knowing what path I was on, just like firing off in 100 different directions and just like waiting to see what would happen. I think sticking to like the routines and stuff is something that showed up to me as well. Like, just something like, I used to be like, why can't I just remember to brush my teeth? Like, why do I find it so difficult to remember to brush my teeth before bed? Like, why is, like, everyone else just knows? And it's like, you know, in your brain, you have to brush your teeth before bed. But then it's just like, yeah, I guess the forgetfulness was another thing for me, and always being the person that, like, forgotten their PE kit or forgotten their stuff for food tech or whatever. But yeah, I think just like generally chaos.
Do you ever get this? This is just a personal question now. Do you ever get the thing where, like, because I know you're saying about kind of like forgetting to brush your teeth, for example. Do you ever have the thing where, like, I can think of doing it all the time, where I'll be sat, and I'm much more inattentive type than I am hyperactive type, like way more. But I'll sit and kind of think, oh, like, I'm thirsty, I need to get a glass of water. And then just sit there and not move and not do it.
It's like you can't like compute the stages of like, doing the thing that you need to do, or like get yourself up to. I do it a lot with like with TikTok. I'll be on my phone on TikTok and I'll be like, you've been on here for so long, you need to get off this. Like, why are you still scrolling? Why, you need to go to bed. And it's like, yeah, you know the thing that you need to do, but your brain just won't do it.
Yes, that thing where you have the thought and think, I should do this now. And 20 minutes later, you're like, oh, you haven't done that thing that you really need to do. Why don't you just stand up right now and do that thing? And you just don't do it. And it's so like, that is the thing that I've really struggled to kind of explain to people over the years, and it's that has been very sort of like affirming for me to hear that other people have the same thing, because it just has always made me feel like I'm just useless and lazy, and there's some, like, not that there's something wrong with me, just that I'm like a shit human being. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I think the laziness thing is like something that is like taken a lot of like I need to like dig around in that a lot, because it's like, yeah, you convince yourself that you're a lazy person. And I was talking to my counselor about it, and she was like, lazy people don't worry that they're lazy. They're just lazy. That's like just who they are as a person. They just accept that, not necessarily even lazy, but just like they just accept that they're chilled out and they're not in a rush and there's no like panic or drive. Lazy people don't sit around thinking, I need to do this thing right now. Like, why aren't I doing it? They just, you know, that's not even a thought process. So for us to be like worrying that we're lazy proves that we're not, because it's like the drive is there to do the thing. Like, it's like you just physically, can't. It's almost like it's the brain doesn't like pass the signal along to like the rest of your body to like catch up with it. It's like, it's almost like it's like aware, and there's like this sort of like conversation going on in my head. Like, you need to do this, or you need to stop doing this, or. And then it's just like not picked up and like passed on to the next person to tell my like legs to stand up or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. It reminds me as well of like a conversation I had with the psychiatrist I was seeing about that. I said to him, I was like, I feel like I am just rubbish, and I've somehow managed to convince both you and myself that I have this condition that I don't even have. And he was like, well, one, what does that say about me? Like, this is literally my job. Like, it's my job to know these things. And two, like, I don't know. It's just, trying to explain all these things that just haven't made any sense for so long. But equally, one of the things he said to me, because where I was thinking, like, oh, I just can't get tasks done, and I don't understand why I don't just have the willpower. Like, I've always thought of myself as someone who has no willpower.
Yeah.
And like, we were talking about like one specific task that I'd been putting off doing for literally like 4 years or something, and he was like, if it was a matter of willpower, at some point in those 4 years you would have just done it. Is that, like, it's not about you not wanting to do it, and get like going through that cycle where I'd get up every morning and think like, right, today I'm going to do that thing, like that task is getting done today, and I will not go to bed until it's done. And then the day just kind of like blaring on by, and me not doing the thing, and going to bed feeling like the worst person in the world, and then just starting all over again. It's so tiring.
Yeah, I think it's the thing as well, like with the willpower, like having the willpower to think about doing that thing every day. Like, if it was about willpower, like you wouldn't spend 4 years thinking about doing something. Like, that takes more energy, or more like not being lazy, to like remind yourself every day to do the thing, than actually just, you know, if you were lazy, you'd probably just do it on the first day, because it's like, then I don't have to think about it anymore. But we've actually used up so much more like willpower or like energy in actually like trying to do it for all of those days, it would actually be easier if you were lazy just to think, right, well, I'll just do it and then I don't have to think about it for the next 4 years. Like, yeah, I Absolutely. Think it is like a real breakthrough when you like realize. I definitely got that like imposter syndrome as well though, like thinking like maybe I'm just faking it to like make everybody think that that's why I'm so, you know, I'm actually not useless. Like, yeah, I think for me that was like a big thing of like, I knew like when I was reading through everything, like after that one conversation with my counselor, I knew reading through it, I was like, I 100% this is me, but I could not accept it until somebody had told me, because I was like, yeah, maybe I am just like trying to convince myself that this is the reason why I've not achieved things, or this is the reason why I'm chaotic or I haven't fit in or whatever. And it's like somebody that wasn't feeling that way wouldn't even consider, because they'd just be, you know, living their life. They wouldn't be thinking like, what's a way that I can convince everybody that this is the right way to live my life? Like,
Yeah,
it's wild how the overactive mind works.
So how have you found, now that you have started talking about this a lot online and you've sort of founded a community around it, how have you found the response to it? Like, have you spoken to a lot of people who have had a similar experience to you? Is it mainly women you've connected with on those very specific sort of points? What has the community element been like for you?
Yeah, I think the main thing is like finally having that thing of like relating to somebody on something. And I think that's like something that I have never really had, you know, like when people would be like, oh, you know, when you do this, and it's like, no, I don't. Like, I think that's the thing that I'd never, like through school, I never really fit into like friendship groups. Like, I've never really had that thing where I could like deeply relate to somebody. And then like you talk to somebody else that's like in the same situation, and they're like, it turns out we all have like lived the same life. Like, we've all done that thing where we convince ourselves we're just lazy. You know, we've all gone through a stage of like, you know, having all these like wild hyperfixations. And it's like having that feeling of being like, oh yeah, it's so reassuring to be like, oh my God, there's actually so many people out there that are living this same life. Just because I haven't personally bumped into them in my school doesn't mean that like it's just me that's going through it. Like, it's, there's so many of us out there. We just haven't known or haven't like been in physical contact with each other. But I think, yeah, I think there's a mix of like all different types of people. But I think the further away that you are from that like white cis boy, the less likely it is that you get that diagnosis when you're young. So the more likely it is that you have all these like relatable experiences because you're undiagnosed. So I think like, yeah, it's just almost that sense of, I think a lot of people have, like, the reason that I wanted to talk about it was to help people get their light bulb moment. And I think a lot of people like have, like, I've had so many people reach out and be like, oh my God, I've seen your stuff. Like, I related to this thing that you've said. I've looked into it. I think this might be my answer too. I'm going to speak to my doctor. And that is like the best thing in the world, being like, that's actually, you know, I know how much better I feel now I've got that clarity, and being able to be like the trigger point for somebody else to go away and get that clarity too. That's amazing. Yeah. I think it's just, yeah, having it, like being able to feel normal. I think, you know, that's something that I have not had. And then for me to speak about it, and for me to even feel normal when hundreds of people are coming back and saying, yeah, I do this too, I've had this too, I've had this too. But for all of those people out there to feel normal because they're seeing someone like publicly speaking about it, I think, yeah, it's amazing that we've like, I think it's almost like double rewarding because we've waited such a long time to have that feeling of feeling normal, or that feeling of like fitting in or belonging. So it's finally like, ah, we finally, like, it's here, we finally got it. It's really nice to, one, have it myself. I think, like, you know, people are like, it's amazing that you like speak about it and you help all these people, and I'm like, it's for me. I get just as much benefit from it as well, because I feel like I fit in somewhere. Like, you know, I've had the same experiences as everyone out there of like not fitting in, and like we're all like getting the benefits. Like, I'm getting the benefit of finally like fitting in and being liked and being related to people, and like at the same time in doing that, helping other people out there to see it and get that feeling as well.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Every week, my guest and I will be answering your questions, and the first one comes in from Grace, who says, "Hi, my name is Grace. I'm 18 and was also recently diagnosed with ADHD. This diagnosis has helped me understand my silly little brain a lot more, and I recently learned about how low frustration tolerance and emotional regulation issues can affect people with ADHD. I often get flooded with emotions and feel like throwing a fit because my brain and body just can't handle them. It feels like barely anyone understands me when I feel this way, because what may seem like a small inconvenience for someone else will seem like the end of the world for me. I get scared to talk about it because I think people will think I'm overreacting. I feel a lot of shame because I'm an adult, and I feel childish in the way I get so flooded with my feelings. Do you have any tips or helpful coping skills for how to deal with this?"
Yeah, I think this is like definitely something that I can relate to. Like, I am definitely that person as well, where like it's like the straw that broke the camel's back, I think, where it's something just happens and it's like it almost like all comes flooding out. I think for me, it's not even like change in that behavior. It's just learning to accept it and think about it in a different way. So I am definitely like the crier. Like, that is my thing. Like, whether I'm tired, whether I'm happy, sad, like that is my almost like, I think it's like that we're so go, 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 go. And then it's like suddenly all these feelings catch up. And for me, it's a cry. And I was explaining, so it was my birthday last week, and I got really emotional on my birthday. And I was explaining to my mum, and I was like, it's not necessarily sadness that's coming out. Like, I tried to explain it like a Coke bottle. So like, if you've got a Coke bottle and you shake it, and whether you're shaking it excitedly or whether you're shaking it angrily or whether you're shaking it sad, like whatever emotion you're shaking it with, it's still the same like froth that comes out the top. And like, that's how I feel with us and an emotion and crying. Like, it's not necessarily like, yeah, it doesn't, if I cry, it doesn't necessarily mean I'm sad. It's just that we've been doing so much shaking because our brains are so kind of, yeah, like overactive and like always looking for this like extra dopamine hit. So we're like searching. That's just like shaking. And eventually, like, once you unscrew the lid, it's going to froth everywhere. And I think for me, it's almost like, yeah, learning to treat the emotion as like not getting mad at myself for getting upset, or not thinking, you know, I, like Grace was saying about kind of feeling childish. I think it's almost like removing that judgment from that thing and just being like, this is just a fact of life. Like, this is just what happens for me. And I think once you like remove that layer of judgment, it almost makes the feeling less intense, I think. Because I think, you know, if you've got this like outburst, and then you've also got you telling yourself, like, you know, why you've been so childish, that like adds to the shaking, it adds to the froth. Whereas if you've just got the emotion of like, I don't know, the anger or the sadness or whatever's coming out, and it's just that on its own, then I think it feels a lot more manageable to be like, okay, this is a feeling that I'm having. Like, I'm going to have my cry, I'm going to have my, you know, stomp around, and then I'm going to feel better afterwards. I think, yeah, removing that like pressure from it. And I guess just like having like safe ways to do that. So for me, like, if I know that I'm like getting to that bubbling point, I will just take myself out for a really long walk. I'll go with my headphones on, I'll just go for a march, and like literally, I like hate to think what I might look like, because I will literally just like stomp it out. But for me, I know that's like a safer way to do it, rather than like to keep forcing myself, you know, going to spend time with people, or like then like, you know, having the reaction in a way that's going to upset somebody, or it's going to like damage a friendship or whatever. Like, yeah, I guess it's trying to like learn the signs that that's coming, even though it does a lot of the time feel out of nowhere. I think if I like really think about it, I know when it's like come in, and then like having almost like a plan B of what to do at that point. So maybe for you it's like going for a walk, maybe it's, I don't know, having a shower to like refresh yourself, maybe it's a certain friend that you can like call and rant about it with, and you know that they're not going to like take it personally. Like, yeah, just having almost like an outlet for like what you're going to do with all that stuff once it starts overflowing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Coke bottle analogy is amazing and makes so much sense. And as you say, it's kind of, that might look different for different people. So some people might cry, some people might get really angry, some people might just, I feel like I'm more just kind of like shut down and can't deal with things, because it's all just, everything's got a bit too much. Like, I know this is not quite the same as maybe getting upset about something, but that really brought to mind for me kind of, it was always supermarkets I'd really struggle with, like busy supermarkets. I went through a period where it just literally, I just couldn't handle it. And I don't know if it was a sensory thing or it was just something about it. But it is that thing where if you don't understand and kind of like talking down to yourself and being like, why can't I deal with this? It's so annoying. But even as Grace is talking about, you know, feeling childish, I feel like, you know, we all at all ages have emotions. And I mean, even if you feel childish, if you like imagine yourself as a child getting upset, you wouldn't be like shouting at and then like berating a child for being upset, because it doesn't help. As you said, it's kind of, if someone's crying and you're just going, stop crying, what are you crying for? Like, that just isn't going to make anyone feel better. So I think that's really good advice. Next question is from Eduarda, who says, how do you feel as a person diagnosed with ADHD about all of the reels and posts online that encourage people to diagnose themselves? And how harmful do you think it can be for people on the internet who consume this content? I understand that maybe seeing some of the symptoms on videos and posts can help someone look for a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but I believe that most of the time people just diagnose themselves and don't always go for professional help. What do you think about that?
I think it's a very grey area, because I can understand that kind of like thing of like, it's not helpful for somebody that doesn't actually have ADHD to kind of think that they do, because the things that, you know, they're going to put into place might not necessarily be the most helpful for them. But I think I am very much kind of like at the other end of the scale, that I know that if it wasn't for seeing videos online, I would never have got my diagnosis, because the stuff that you see on like the NHS website is very catered at that young white boy. So like the way that some of the traits are explained, I could have read through it and been like, yeah, kind of like, yeah, I'm a bit forgetful, but like it wouldn't have really related to me in the same way. Whereas when I saw other people with lived experience talking about it, it was almost like translating those black and white symptoms into like a real life experience that I'd experienced. And it was like, oh my God, yeah, I actually really do that. So I think for me, and that's kind of why I choose to post about it online, because it's giving people that context to relate to. I think another thing to kind of like bring up is that like a medical diagnosis is a huge privilege. Like the waiting lists are so long. Like I was really lucky to be able to afford to pay for it, and I'm so grateful for that. But that's not possible for everybody. And, you know, the waiting list can be up to like 4 years in certain places. So if somebody doesn't have a choice whether to get a medical diagnosis or not, you know, they're literally on the waiting list. So if they can make that decision for themselves and self-diagnose, then they can, you know, start the accepting themselves, start, you know, learning why they've done the things that they've done, start putting things into place to cope better. And I think that that's, like, the risk of people not knowing is greater than the risk of somebody maybe self-diagnosing a bit like jumping the gun. I think, like, you know, there's no in a perfect world, we'd all be able to, you know, find out about it, go see a doctor the next day, get a diagnosis and get the help that we need. But we don't live in a perfect world. And again, like, the diagnostic criteria it's based on research done on young white boys. So if you're any further away from that, you might, even if you physically have ADHD, you might, if you know, if you're like a black person, if you're a queer person, if you're a trans person, if you're a woman, you might go and sit in front of a doctor and go through the things and they're like, no, that doesn't quite tick the box, because the box wasn't designed for how it shows up in you. So like, not only is it hard to even get to the point of having an appointment, because you might have to either wait 4 years or pay hundreds of pounds, you then also might not even get that answer at the end of the appointment, just because the questions weren't worded in quite a way that like represents the way that it shows up for you. So yeah, I think it's a gray area as well. Like, obviously don't watch one video and relate to one thing and think that's it, I've got my answer. But I don't think anyone that actually, you know, is looking for it would do that. I think a lot of it is, you know, I guess considering that it's not having one trait of ADHD that means that you have ADHD, it's having the whole range of them and relating to loads of different things. So I think, like, my opinion would be that self-diagnosis is completely valid when done in like a thorough way. So if you've like gone online, you've like watched as much content as you can consume, you've like gone through online tests, you've like read up on stuff, and you at that point, with all the information, you come to the conclusion that you meet the diagnostic criteria, then I think that you're just as valid to make that decision as a doctor is. Obviously, it kind of becomes complicated because ADHD, you can get the medication, you need a medical diagnosis for that. But I think like there are risks to people talking about the, you know, seeing one video and self-diagnosing. But I think the greater risk is people not being able to self-diagnose, because then they're left in this like state of beating themselves up and not knowing and confusion for such a longer time.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with a lot of that. I think, like you say, it is a massive privilege to be able to access a diagnosis. And I don't know, it's making me think of, so last week on the podcast, we had Dr. Sarah Vora, the mind medic, who is a psychiatrist. And I was talking with her about, not about this specifically, but about kind of taking mental, not mental health in this case, but mental sort of advice on social media. And we were talking about how, you know, there's a certain element where you do, as a consumer of that media, need to exercise, you know, some critical thinking and kind of go into some of those posts. Like if you see a post from someone who has ADHD talking about symptoms and you go past it and say, oh, that sounds like me, you kind of need to be thinking to yourself, was this a problem for me before? Like is this answering like a problem that I've actually been having, or am I just like kind of relating to something which isn't really an issue for me? Like that one particular trait that I might have is not causing me a problem.
Yeah,
and kind of
a lot of sense.
Think whether it is something that you need to really dig into. It's hard to say as well, because as much as we say, you know, you can do research and try the absolute best you can to figure these things out, even like we were talking about earlier, where we were either diagnosed or possibly misdiagnosed with different parts of, you know, different mental health conditions, for example, there are traits of ADHD, which you might read online, that very well could be confused with other things. So as you say, in an ideal world, we would all be able to access the professionals who could 100% give us the answers to these things. As it is, we can't. But I think if you go into it with, you know, as much critical thinking as you can muster, and then if you think you've found your answer and what you're doing with that information is, you know, reading self-help articles or like trying some small behavior changes, that's not going to do you any harm. But if that really helps someone who isn't able to access a psychiatrist, for example, then I think the harm, as you say, the risk of harm is fairly low for someone doing that, as opposed to what the alternative might be.
Yeah, I think it's something that I think a lot of people face as well when talking up online. Like I get so many comments, especially on like TikTok, where I'll like do a relatable post about one trait or one thing that I experience, and there'll be a comment like, this doesn't make you autistic. And I'm like, no, I'm well aware that this doesn't make me autistic. This is just one of my experiences as an autistic person. And I think it's like, finding that level of like, just because like it's not that one experience that means that you have ADHD, it's that might be something that you experience as a person that has ADHD, like one of 100 experiences. So I think with that critical thinking, it's like, it's like if you're seeing one video and you're like, that sounds about right, or if you're literally seeing it over and over again and you're like, no, seriously, this is like explaining my whole entire life, then that's like two completely like different situations.
Yeah, I agree. Next question from Emma, who says, I was recently diagnosed with ADHD and haven't told many people. How did you tell your friends and family that you have ADHD, and what was their reaction?
I think I was so obsessed with finding the answer before I found it that there was like, it was almost like I couldn't shut up about it. So I didn't really have this problem of like feeling concerned to tell people, because I was like in that low place and I was like desperately searching for, I think my hyperfixation became my own mind. Like I was literally like desperately reading stuff and watching videos and consuming, like I became obsessed with this idea that, you know, this is the answer for me. So kind of in that, I'd already spoken to like my friends and family. My partner at the time would literally say to me like, can we just talk about something else? Like, because I was so consumed. And so it was almost like, once I got to that point, I didn't have to worry about telling other people because I'd already spoken about it. And I think because I'd already been vocal about like anxiety in the past. Like all my family, you know, knew that I had anxiety. They knew that I'd dropped out of school. They knew the struggles that I'd had. So it was almost like a positive thing of like, oh, I know why all that stuff happens now, rather than being like something that I'm like, oh, I'm nervous to tell them because, you know, it's something that they're not going to expect. Like it was almost like a solution to a problem rather than a problem in itself. But I do understand that people, you know, do feel a bit nervous. There is still kind of a stigma around things like these. And I think especially like employers, people are always worried about telling because it's like, oh, I don't want my employer to think that I'm not capable of my job or stuff like that. I think it's important to remember that you don't owe anyone anything. So if you don't feel comfortable sharing that information with somebody, you don't have to. Like that's, it's up to you who you want to share it with. And I think, you know, it's important. Like it's one of those kind of classic things of like the people that mind don't matter and the people that matter don't mind. Like I think anybody that, you know, knows you and loves you and cares about you is going to be happy. They're not even going to not mind. They're going to be actively happy for you that you've got an answer and you've got like the information that you can now go and help make life better for yourself. You know, they're not going to be like, oh, you know, you're still the same human. Like nothing changes. You've not been given a new brain that's like faulty or whatever. You've just got a name for the brain that you've had that your whole life. So yeah, I think it can feel scary, and like hopefully as more people are talking about it, that stigma will be kind of lessened and it won't feel like, you won't have the worry about people judging you because they will hopefully have more information to not judge you and to know that it's not a bad thing at all. But yeah, I think kind of just being careful with who you do share it with. If you are feeling a bit uncertain about it, you know, don't go to somebody that, you know, you don't feel like he's going to support you, and kind of first turn to the people that you can trust and that you know that will support you, and kind of get your confidence in sharing it with them first, I guess. And yeah, I guess remember that nothing's changed. You're not suddenly a different person just because you've got a name for the thing that's been going on your whole life. You're just, yeah, it's like a solution to the problem of not knowing rather than a problem in itself.
Yeah, definitely. I really like that way of looking at it. I think especially, Emma, because you've said you were recently diagnosed as well. I mean, for some people like you yourself, like you might have been talking about it already, but if it is a really recent diagnosis for you, like that might just take some time for you to kind of come to terms with and process yourself as well. Like it might not be that, you know, in 6 months' time or a year's time or 2 weeks' time, like you might feel much more like you want to talk about it. Like I think I was quite differently from you. I didn't really talk about it much beforehand, apart from with, so it was one of my best friends was actually the person who first sent me like someone's video who was talking about having ADHD and was like, this really sounds like you, because she obviously knew me so well and kind of knew all of the like horrible things that I said to myself in my brain that I didn't tell anyone else. And I'd spoken to my mum already as well and kind of broached that a little bit, because as part of getting a diagnosis, like the psychiatrist had encouraged me to do that, because you go back and kind of answer questions about what you're like now as an adult, what you were like as a child. Like, can you get someone to talk to you about that and kind of see what makes sense and what doesn't make sense and all the rest of it. So I feel like for me, there were a couple of people who I'd sort of spoken to during the process. And then when I actually got that diagnosis, I sent a text just to like a couple of like my closest like family members. And then like, they were just really supportive. I kind of sent it as in, this is what's been going on for me. This is why I looked into it. This is what happened. And this is how I feel about it. So kind of like give them a bit of an overview and not just like, hello. I think if you give someone a reason to say like, this is why this has happened, this is what happened, and then, you know, this is my reaction to it, it kind of gives them a platform to like know how to talk back to you about
the context.
So I feel like if you go in cold, if you kind of just say to someone out of the blue like, oh, by the way, I've got ADHD, which, I mean, if that's how you want to do it, of course that's your right at the same time, but I think a lot of people wouldn't, you know, this is something that we've obviously learned more about, but a lot of people wouldn't know that much about it. So you wouldn't know whether to say, you know, I'm sorry, or like, well done, or whatever. Whereas like with a bit of context, I feel like my family were literally like, congratulations, I'm like really proud of you for like going after it. Like my mum sent me flowers, it was so sweet. Like, I think if you give people a bit of the background information that you have probably spent so long digging up for yourself. It might just make that process a little bit easier.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense.
If you want to know about opportunities to send in questions for upcoming guests, then follow us on Instagram or Twitter at goodinfluencegs, and you can email the podcast at goodinfluencepod@gmail.com. Before you go, I've got three things I ask every guest, and that's if listeners want to find out more about what we've been talking about today. Could you please recommend us something to read, something to listen to, and something to watch?
Yeah, I actually found this really hard because I think it's the same thing as well, that it's like the information isn't out there in like the technical places. It's on other people to like be the translators of how it does show up in women. Mm-hmm. But something to read, I would recommend ADHD and A to Z. My lovely friend and ADHD coach Leanne has just republished that, and I've actually written the foreword for it, so I'm really excited. But that, for me, reading that was like so many things where you kind of have those mini light bulb moments where you're like, ah, yeah, it's like all the things that you haven't like clicked before, and then you read through it and you're like, ah, that explains that. So I would definitely recommend that to read. To listen to, some more of my lovely friends have an Instagram account called I Am Paying Attention, which was a huge part of me learning about myself and having those things to relate to. And they run a podcast where they kind of chat about all things being a neurodivergent woman. So I would definitely recommend checking their account out and listening to the podcast. And something to watch, I actually was going to say like other neurodivergent creators, because I think for me that was the thing that, you know, there's no kind of like professional resources out there that hit me in the same way as hearing somebody that I could relate to explain something in a way that it had showed up for them. So I think like, yeah, listen to other women that have going through the same experience and talk to other people. And, you know, I think looking for the people with ADHD that are creating content is a good way to kind of have, yeah, that translation of maybe a black and white thing that didn't relate to you as much to be in like a moment in life that you can relate to. So yeah, I would say absorb as many kind of creators as you can.
Thank you for listening, and thank you, Ellie, for joining me. If you enjoyed the episode, I'd love you to subscribe to the podcast on whichever platform you're using. And if you've got an extra little minute, you can leave a rating and a review as well. Your reviews make a big difference and help other people find the podcast. See you next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.